But resilient thinking means thinking in actions, in activities, whereas sustainability is more the thinking in future, but it is not so easy to define it, what is mean by future.
Are you interested in resilience as thinking in activities? What do you think about the city as the place of innovation? How can we use the sustainability pillars, economic, environmental, and social aspects, in a concentric way? Stay tuned for answers from Professor Rudolf Giffinger.
What is the future for cities? Do you want to learn more about them? Do you want to know how others think about them? Do you want to be part of the conversation? Then this is the right place.
Welcome to What is the Future for Cities podcast. Today, I will interview Professor Rudolf Giffinger, urban and regional development expert. We will talk about his vision for the future of cities, smart cities, resilience, sustainability, thinking in activities, and many more. So let's start with a proper introduction. Professor Dr. Rudolf Giffinger is a renowned expert in urban and regional development, with a background in geography from the University of Vienna and further specialization in regional science and urban studies. Rudolf has extensively contributed to the study of urban decay, smart city development, and housing market dynamics. His work, emphasizing sustainable and resilient urban planning through ICT, has been published in numerous books and journals, establishing him as a leading figure in his field. He has held prestigious roles, including the head of the Center for Urban and Regional Research at the Vienna University of Technology, and garnered international recognition with his publications on smart city and resilient urban development. Despite his retirement, his influence continues through teaching and ongoing scholarly contributions. And with that, Rudolf, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for your time. I highly appreciate your opinions on the podcast. Let's jump right in. What does the future of cities mean to you?
There is not one future for cities, because cities are experiencing very specific developments and they are following certain paths. Even also the future will be different depending on different factors or components which may condition these future paths for the cities. Thinking about such important components, I would say that globalization is one of these important developments which cities are experiencing, because for some decades, cities had been winning through globalization because they could reallocate economic production, reduce emissions to make products cheaper, etc., etc. But on the other side, we see that globalization is a rather sensitive issue nowadays, depending on political commitments on the global level, but also on impacts through war or terrorism, through accidents and climate change. For instance, when the Suez Canal was closed for some days, which impacted very much the production chains for the European economies. For sure, it is very much dependent on the recent or the historic path of a city. I learned in many excursions, visiting cities or cooperating with different cities in projects, I learned that cities have a completely different self-understanding, which comes out of historic tradition, which comes out of political experiences, not only of last years, but of decades. Therefore, the assets of cities today are rather different. Cities show different profiles. This even we learned when we analyzed European medium-sized cities, for instance, in one of our projects on smartness, that cities in the different countries or in different cultural regions, they show completely different profiles in terms of economic performance, in terms of cultural issues, in terms of demographic issues, etc. And this is very important because the future will bring chances and risks. and problems, and cities have to cope with. And this, they're very much dependent on the capacities and the experience of cities to help. And of course, the future of cities will be very much dependent on the immigration flows. Not only a big challenge for European or Austrian cities, but for many cities, because cities are growing predominantly through immigration on the regional level, on the interregional, on the national or international, and even between continents. So how to manage immigration and to integrate immigrating groups, ethnic groups with different cultures, with different languages, this is not an easy task. If cities have experience, they have more ideas how to do that than others who are confronted the first time with immigration flows. So the future, there is not one future. The question how to make cities livable for the next years, for the next generations, and this has a lot to do with its history, with its capacities, and with the experiences and the political interpretation.
You mentioned globalization, and in your description, this was more about connections, that we have connections across cities, connections across nations, connections across continents. That was what you meant by globalization?
Connections, the possibility to exchange not only good because of improved transport systems and technologies, but also to exchange knowledge and production processes based on codified knowledge and modern communication system. On the other side, the decrease of national barriers through political commitments between countries, between groups of countries.
Before we move on, I would like to ask you, because you were talking about how cities are different based on their history, politics, nations, characteristics, opportunities, and challenges. How do you understand the city itself?
The city, for me, is a spatial concentration of different systems. This means that systems in the social sphere, in the economic sphere, in the cultural sphere are overlapping, and technical systems are created in order to run daily life in cities. Cities show a very specific or high spatial concentration of such systems. And not to forget the ecological system, because I learned in the last years that we as mankind, we as citizens, we have not to see the city as the materialization only, but we are ourselves, we are part of the city, which means that we have socially produced cities based on our values, based on our power systems, political decisions, historic developments, but we are part in such systems. So this means a social ecological perspective on the city is for me today has become more decisive, more important.
Adrian McGregor in episode 190 talks about bio-urbanism and how, in his understanding, the city is not divorced of nature. It's not something unnaturalistic. It's part of nature. That's what he calls bio-urbanism. In your understanding with this ecological part of the city,
social ecology. Of course, the city is a social product. And we learned to produce cities, inventing new technologies, inventing new governance structures in order to coordinate our buildings, our material things, and to produce our material things. But in that perspective, we forgot about that we are part of the whole ecology. We, as society, as members of societies, but also the economic units, but also the buildings and the transport systems, etc., we are part embedded in an ecological system. This typical design, what means sustainability? We always have this picture with the three pillars, the ecological, the economic, and the social pillar. If we are able to integrate them, then we have a sustainable development. For me, it's not really decisive understanding of sustainability. There is another one which says that we have the ecological system, and within this, it is embedded the social system, and within this, it is embedded the economics.
So instead of talking about three different pillars, these are circles, and the ecological one is the biggest, the social is a bit smaller, in the ecological and economical is even smaller than the social.
Because a society exists in many different forms. The society establishing political systems is establishing the form of production, the mode of production. And we have learned to organize our social systems, not to be in too many conflicts with the economic system since industrialization, 200 years more or less, depending where. But for a long time, we learned how to embed the economic system with many problems, because there is always conflict between economic interests and the broader social system. And we forgot about the ecological system, not having such a social ecological view on our world.
Do you have an idea why we forgot that we are part of the ecological system as well?
It's a question of education and of socializing processes. What we are experiencing, which values do we have in the social system? Well, we had been educated for many generations, always believing that the economic wealth will provide better cities or more livable cities, etc. And we did not consider in the economic system the spillovers of the economic system, to be called that the externalities are not included into prices, etc., etc. So we learn to have a regulated working time, times for vacation. We learned how to produce certain things, to collaborate in economic processes. But we did not really learn how this is embedded in a certain geographical conditions. It is embedded in the ecological system of a region. In urbanized areas, everything is artificial. It seems to be artificial. It is produced.
It's very interesting you say that it's part of our education that we are taught that economically viable and livable.
Probably it is only my experience. I have the impression that even nowadays, the next generations still thinking in that way, or many of them. But now you can see some changes regarding nutrition, regarding lifestyles. You can already see many new initiatives, small initiatives or more important initiatives, which already discussing or confronting the social system or the economic system with ecology.
Which is reassuring that we are trying to improve our understandings and lifestyles for a better future. Which brings me to ask you, you mentioned that part of the future of cities is that we make them more livable. What does livability mean to you?
It's a good question. There is now a new publication in the, I guess it's in the Springer Verlag, edited by Peter Neikamp and two other colleagues on livable cities. And I was asked to contribute to this book. So let me answer your question. What is a livable cities? For me, means that cities have to become more resilient and smarter.
The next question is, what does smartness mean to you?
It's a question which was raised now 16 years ago when we did our first project on smartness, on smart cities. We did not really have in mind the technology, but technology is behind our understanding. And we say that the smartness of a city is dependent on the performance of a city. This means quality in living, quality in housing, quality in cultural activities, quality in economic development, mobility. And the crucial question is, the city or its stakeholder, including residents or NGOs, are the stakeholders the opinion there should something improved in order to reorganize it in a better way, to make it more efficient, or to improve the quality by innovation? And of course, this brings into discussion the idea of technological innovation, most of all. This is the basic understanding of smart city. This is the economic understanding that cities need new technologies in order to make economic processes more efficient, or to make the transport system more efficient, or to reduce emissions, or to have better control on the flows within cities' steering systems. This is the technical aspect, but for me, it was always important that one has to look at the assets and the deficits in cities. What is already acknowledged as an asset, because people, residents like it, citizens are proud of that, they like it. And on the other side, what are deficits which may produce new problems for the future of the city? And then the city itself has to find its way of decision-making. It's not a technical decision. It's a decision through active participation and through transparency in decision-making and in good scientific-based evidence. This is our understanding of smart city. And I'm not a technologist. Originally, I was a geographer and I'm a regional scientist. The basic idea, usually, smartness has to do with technology, with institutions, and with citizens and residents or actors, because it's not only the citizen who is living in the city, it is the actor who is doing something in the city. The tourist, the entrepreneur, the manager coming from outside, but also the family which is visiting a museum. So this means the actors in the city. We are most of all concentrating on this idea that the governance system is very important in combination with the actors in order to decide which kind of technology is a good idea for the city. In this perspective, I did several projects, international projects, asking for more energy efficiency in medium-sized cities in Europe, across Finland, Estonia, Britain, etc., etc. I did a more intensive project for Kraków in Poland, the second largest city in Poland, which tried to understand that it is not economic big enterprises who should say what is needed, but it should be discussed within stakeholder groups. So it was more or less a network approach to integrate different perspectives into discussion of the future.
Since your experience with smart cities spans an enormous amount of time, if we consider that smart city was first mentioned in 1990, I would love to understand how your understanding, your definition, your use of the smart city term changed over time.
It didn't change. We did this first project in 2007. We did in an interdisciplinary group. The main focus was on one of the medium-sized cities in Austria. And in order to give the city with its stakeholders, politicians, chambers, etc., to give them an idea how to rethink governance approach. At that point, it was less the discussion which technology is needed, but then big amounts of money had been offered for projects. And I was invited to several seminars or speeches. What do I understand? And the basic question in many cases was, Professor, we do have the technology, but we have no idea how to introduce it in the city. I was invited in another project. This was called ASCIMA. It is published. It was headed by colleague Andres Monzon from the Universidad Politécnica de Madrid. And we did a project for the European Investment Bank, assessing what kind of investments could be a good idea for the cities around the Mediterranean Sea. They understood my understanding, because it was not only this simple assessment to say, ah, you don't have a metro, you need a metro. Ah, you don't have whatever, yeah, you need that. but to have a look what are the dominant problems in such cities, and then to argue what kind of technology could improve the efficiency in terms of emissions or in terms of energy use or of mobility change, etc. In that regard, I did not change my understanding, but I had to make it clearer with respect to different technologies. And of course, during the last years, it was predominantly the question of mobility and energy transition.
Why were mobility and energy mainly in the foreground for you in the last few years?
Looking at empirical situation, it is very evident that cities are the place of traffic and of energy consumption through its different activities within the city. It is very obvious that cities are producing more emissions, or the major part of emissions on the global level, but this holds true for the national levels of most countries in the meantime. Not all, some already reorganized their mobility systems, tried to reduce energy consumption of non-renewable energy sources. I learned a lot in one of these European projects. Housing with its production and energy consumption is producing 1/3 of emissions in the European case. I have no idea how it is in the US or in Australia. And the same holds for mobility, the dependent on the private car use. We do have big problems of emissions or CO2 emissions. And the question is how to find a path or how to transform the mobility patterns in favor of public transport.
I've read the original report you did for the European Union in 2007 for the medium-sized European cities.
Yeah, the interesting point was this was not a project for the European Union. It was used by the Commission, but it was not funded by the Commission. Oh, it was a project which was privately funded.
This original 2007 project, the report was already on the podcast discussed in the first episode, because when I talk with people about smart cities, they usually reference your name and say that you established the 6 most important things for cities to become smart. Okay. But then I ask whether they read the report itself. They didn't, which is interesting because in the report itself, you highlight that please don't use just the 6 in and of themselves, because that's very important, that the 72 indicators and other characteristics are also very important. How do you grapple with this, that you made something amazing and even just the 6 is really good for people to think about cities, the 6 different areas, but they don't usually go to the source and understand what you mean by that? How do you grapple with that?
I was asked in scientific conferences how we could define these 6 fields of development. And I said, this was a heuristic decision. There was not analysis behind that. It was the outcome of an interdisciplinary project with colleagues from, they are mentioned as authors, from Slovenia and from the Netherlands, and here from Vienna and the city of Graz. Not only planners, urbanists, architects, city managers. So it was a very interesting group, let's say, with very good discussions. The secret behind these 6 fields is obviously we identified 6 fields on the one hand side of urban policies are more or less traditional. But at the same time, they cover the different systems which are operating in the city and which have to be coordinated or integrated because they are developing in different speed. They are including different stakeholders and actors. So there was a kind of complexity behind this definition. But on the other side, it was an open definition because it covers 6 fields, but behind it covers subdomains which can be discussed. There is no claim that this will hold for all cities in the same way. one conclusion of that was that doing this with a quantitative approach, we say that the livability is expressed by using this and that indicators. There was a lot of pragmatic decisions behind. We had better ideas sometimes, but depending on the good statistical sources, we used from the European statistics. And we used even in our understanding that it has to be representing the social production of the city. This means also the assessment through citizens. And the Eurobarometer is a survey which is done several times a year, but with specific topics. And it is representative for all cities with more than 100,000 inhabitants. So it's not only the description of a performance of a city through measured indicators based on physical performances, but it is also the representation what citizens think about this damage. And this goes very much in line with our understanding of the city. And stakeholders like this approach. I had many requests from teachers, from Ireland, from Sweden, different countries on this approach because they wanted to work with the students or with the pupils in order to discuss the urban future and livability of the city. It was not only the big business and the big project. It was even these local impacts we could gain with this webpage.
That sounds amazing that even the small players can be involved in this process.
Finally, I did even scientific advice to students in Colombia and also, and most of all, in Brazil. And of course, I said, if you want to develop such an approach for Brazilian cities, you shouldn't use our classification.
For the audience, the six fields were smart economy, smart people, smart governance, smart mobility, smart environment, and smart living. We talked about what the city means, what smartness means, what future of the city means. What are your three biggest fears regarding the future of cities?
There are three perspectives which define my concerns recently. The first one is the collapse through fast growth. This means cities are depending on immigration, because birth rates are usually rather low in most cities. But nowadays, through these immigration flows, we already see that cities do not have enough capacities for the integration. And the more there are cultural differences, the harder is the integration process. And the harder are the political reactions within cities. This has a lot to do with my understanding that cities should be an open-minded entity where integration should be possible. But on the other side, one has to see that many groups in cities and most of all groups who do not have the same capacities to accept immigration, pre-justice, or run into political movements which are endangering the freedom of cities, which we can experience in cities. Of course, it is also the increasing density, it is the increasing conflict, what we are experiencing in fast-growing cities, because cities do not have enough capacities for the integration processes, but also in the transport system or in the housing, which affects many different groups in the housing market, most of all students. This is for me a real concern, even that this perspective that immigration flow will increase because of climate change and other reasons on the global I already mentioned. This means that this integrative power cities do have usually has limits and has limited capacities. How to increase them in front of increasing immigrant flows is not so easy. And it's not only the ethnical aspect or cultural aspect, it is also a social aspect, because we have to acknowledge that social polarization is increasing in most countries and most cities. Poverty in absolute terms is increasing in our cities. and in relative terms compared to the development of the richest, is much faster increasing. This means, again, that it's a question of capacities, how to organize housing problems of having a livable city. And finally, under the impression of most recent discussions and movements, I see a territorial fragmentation. On the one hand side, it is not new because cities and growing cities are growing already far beyond city borders. So we do have urban regions, metropolitan regions, depending on size, but we do have relative stable, traditional administrative and political systems. And this means that there are increasing disparities or heterogeneous interests between municipalities and the city, between different groups in the city, in the region or on different levels, on the regional level, on the state level, etc. So that this also leads to a certain duality or polarization between the region and the city itself. And what nowadays has become very prominent are these manifestations of the agrarian architects. What happened in Germany and in France nowadays from the agrarian sector, the farmers are manifesting the protest and they are blocking the transport towards the city, the transport of food, the transport of everything. If you look at Paris just these days, from a scientific point of view, this is a clear indication that the hope or the hypothesis that cities are the node of economic growth, which is trickling down to the regions, does not really work by different reasons. I'm not an expert on that, but this is very obvious looking at such manifestations which show this protest of agrarian actors blocking the transportation network in and around cities nowadays. This is an urban-rural conflict which is again gaining in importance.
Before we move on to the opportunities and maybe how we could solve these concerns, you mentioned very interestingly that there is a city size which has been working for municipalities and political systems. What is the city size?
A very intelligent question. There is not one city size. I was asked by a city nearby Vienna, please, professor, tell us what is the optimal city size. I said, okay, I can show you a long algorithm, but you will not learn from that. You can never define what is the optimal city size. It is always a question of the geographical conditions, of the social system, and the capacities a city is able to offer in the different infrastructure networks, in education, in social infrastructure, in transport system, in energy provision, etc. And of course, even cities like Vienna, they are arguing today that it is more environmentally friendly if we have multi-store buildings using less space, less sealed space than if you go to in the suburbs to family house areas. For sure, this is correct. But on the other side, even a city has to consider its ecological systems, how to bring in fresh air, how to reduce temperature through vegetation. Last but not least, how to produce more food for the nutrition of the population in the region, let's say. So it's not easy to answer. What is more important to understand this problem is based on the experience in German and Austrian cities that how is the development of the urban system. And this means different city sizes. Of course, we can discuss the city size of Vienna. It's reaching 2 million. Now, 30 years ago, Vienna was growing more than 300,000 inhabitants. So it's not really fast if you look at Bogota or other cities. But having or expecting a certain quality in livability then it is a big challenge for any city in the world. Even Vienna is coping now with the problems of housing shortage and the problems how to reduce heat islands now in the run of climate change, how to produce green infrastructure in order to bring in more fresh air, etc. There is not one answer on that question. If there is strong immigration in cities, one has to consider even the flows to cities of different size. This has become for sure one of the most urgent problems we see in Europe, because the bigger agglomeration or the metropolises are gaining too much or growing too fast, whereas other cities are decreasing, are losing population, economic performance, are losing enterprises, etc., etc. And this has to do with this urban-rural disparities which emerged and which are now leading to these manifestations and protests. The city size always is depending on the resources, on the geographical and ecological resources a city has, and the social and economic capacities.
And I don't want to stay with the fears and concerns. So what are the three biggest opportunities regarding the future of cities for you?
Cities are the place of innovation. This means cities always have been the place of the introduction of new production modes, of new goods, of new social forms of collaboration, of cultural events or cultural values. And this is my hope, and this is the perspective and the opportunity where cities can help or can offer new perspectives during the next years. And this has a lot to do with this necessity to become more sustainable on the one hand side, based on intelligent technologies, intelligent decisions. But this has also to do with social innovations. And this means, what do we eat? What kind of nutrition do we need? How do we organize it? Do we organize it again on the global level or more on the regional level? And to find new forms of organization to secure nutrition. Another point is, of course, in a more technological sense, is energy efficiency, but also the transition towards the use of renewable energy sources. And again, cities do have big potentials to use renewable energy sources. I think many cities are on a good way to do that. This has a lot to do with the mobility transition. And again, many cities already showed some success. Probably it is still not enough. This is more scientific discussion than to go into details and the strategic discussion how to speed up these transformation processes. And this has a lot to do with resilience. For me, resilience has become this crucial thinking, how we can understand cities and what could be the future of cities. Because resilient thinking is thinking in activities and is not dependent on the economic system, but also on the social system. And having in mind this embeddedness into geographical environmental conditions. Each city has to find its own way, what is very important. A city in the Alpine region has completely different challenges than a city here in the plain Eastern Austrian regions. This is the holds everywhere. Regarding climate change, even we do not know what will be the major problem. Is the next flooding? Most cities in Austria have done a lot. Vienna has done a lot against the floodings. But on the other side, how the rainfall will change during next years, which heat periods will we experience, which heat islands we have to change through measures, etc. The challenges where cities are asked to find solutions. For me, this means resilience is even more or less equally important to the sustainability thinking. But resilience thinking means thinking in actions, in activities, whereas sustainability is more the thinking in future, but it is not so easy to define it, what is meant by future. Of course, resilience means in the first step to make urban systems more resistant. First of all, we are thinking of technical systems, but in many cases, the strengthening of technical systems are not sustainable in many cases. But this is still not resilience, because it means also to improve or to strengthen social systems. This means, we call it blue light organizations and health systems. If you think about COVID, social systems have been stressed enormously on different levels, if you look across cities. And most of all, resilience means to adapt to new conditions, to become more flexible. But the fragile systems, the first question is how to make them more flexible in order to adapt. This is a typical ecological question. We know from ecological studies from the 70s, what are the capacity to resist, to become flexible or not fragile. So we have to learn. We have to learn in order to understand how we can react or how we can act in the face of new impacts, which we do not know today, because then we could improve the resistance. But improving the resistance of a river in its bed, it doesn't help if we do have drought periods. Simple example. We do not know what we do not know regarding the climate change. We have already some evidence, no question, but it would be naive to think that we know everything now about climate change. This is not the case. And this means we have to learn and to strengthen innovative capacities in the social context and in an economic or technical context, because then we can react in a more flexible way to adapt to new conditions. That's the reason why I changed, even in my scientific activities, I did some publications now on resilient urban development, because of course, technology is an important aspect, but again, technology not in the sense to improve the resistance through monitoring, through real-time decisions. That's okay. It's an improvement, but improving, strengthening resistance. But we can use technology also in order to improve our educational systems. Again, to introduce or to teach our pupils, our next generations on certain open questions. And we can use technology in order to bring in collective knowledge, which is not a local knowledge, but which may help us to find better local solutions for them. And for that, we need collective knowledge.
Rudolf, you have been very generous with your time, and I highly appreciate your answers. What is your role in establishing the future of cities?
You know that since 2 years, nearly 2.5 years, I'm retired. I'm still teaching. That was the opportunity to continue teaching next generations in planning, most of all in planning issues. But in the context of urban development, I still publish, but now I'm not involved in bigger projects recently. So I guess even my publication activities will be reduced. But I'm still doing reviews for international journals, most of all in the context of smart cities and partly on resilience issues. And I still advise not only in projects, but also in the programming for the funding. So this means how to conceptualize next funding programs, which will subsidize new projects. So I guess the activities will decrease in intensity, but I will continue in order to work on the future of cities and livable cities.
And I am so grateful personally for you sharing the knowledge and still giving us your experiences and expertise on the smart cities and the future of cities and livability. So thank you so much for your time today.
It was really interesting to hear from Rudolf his differentiation between sustainability and resilience, one being thinking about the future and the latter thinking in actions. Not to mention his conviction of cities needing different futures.
Yours truly, Fanny Melles, talked about similar sentiments in episode 156. You can find out more about Rudolf online, or the links are in the show notes. What was the most interesting part for you? What questions did arise regarding Rudolf's approach to the future of cities? What have you learned from this interview? Let me know on Twitter at WTF4Cities or on the WTF4Cities.com website where the transcripts and show notes are available. You can also subscribe on the website not to miss any new episodes and leave some feedback. I hope this was an interesting interview for you as well, and thanks for tuning in.
What is the Future for Cities podcast?